For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The opinions represented during this show may not necessarily represent those of KRMG or Cox Media Group.
Your host is Dan Witham, a financial advisor with offices at 8516 East 101st Street, Suite C in Tulsa. His office phone number is 918-398-8387. Dan is a branch manager with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA SIPC. Now here's Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
And good Sunday morning. My name's Russell Mills, and you are listening to Money Talk. We're live and local here in the big city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. In the studio with me, as on just about every darn Sunday, Mr. Dan Witham and Mr. Steve Money. Remember, if you got questions for us today, you can text us at 95920. My first question every week is, hey, Dan, what book are you giving away this week?
Well, thank you, Russell. We have a great book this week. It's called The Elements of Investing, Easy Lessons for Every Investor. Steve, easy. A word, John, I know you like.
Easy and investing.
Okay, as long as there's no math.
Seems a little oxymoronic, but
Steve
maybe
is,
not.
Steve is all for it if there's no math involved.
Absolutely.
Anyhow, this book is called The Elements of Investing. It shows you how to focus on the long term instead of following market fluctuations that are likely to lead to costly investing mistakes. It contains insights that can carry you all the way to and through retirement. And it's a pretty, I think, thorough book. I've given away before. It's been a year or two since I've given it away. But it also brings a disciplined approach to investing, along with some understanding of your behavior, which is probably the key element in investing, I would say, for all of us. That's the key element where everything kind of goes off the rails for us, usually is what it is. Anyhow, you can get a free copy of this excellent book, and we'll send you information on the equity-linked CDs, a brochure on them that explains what they are and how they work as well. And I'll explain more about that in a second. But anyhow, before I forget, the number to call for the book and the information, 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. It is the weekend. See, we'll get our voicemail. All we ask is that you leave your name and your address when you get our voicemail, and we will send that information in the book out to you absolutely free. And the information is on equity-linked CDs, which are somewhat complicated products, but they're decent for the right people, but you need to research them thoroughly. We'll talk more about it later in the show. But we have a video on our website now on equity-linked CDs, Russell, that explains the mechanics of how they work, the basics of how they work, which I would encourage people to look at. And my website, is moneytalktulsa.com. That's moneytalktulsa.com. And there's a link on the right side of the page that says featured links. And if you click on that, it'll take you to another page. And at the top, it'll say market-linked CDs or certificates of deposit. And you can click on that. It'll bring you up a little video for you. It's about a three-minute video. It's not very long, but it explains the basics of how they work. And make sure you do your research before you jump into something like that. But just it might be of interest to some people. We'll talk more about it later in the show.
Do you still have the annuity CDs? The annuity videos out there?
Yes, sir. It's still there. It's right under the Equity Link CD one.
Wow. Yeah. So I see this commercial on TV the other day, and at the end of it, the guy says, "We never have, and we never will sell annuities." Like, I actually played it back. Did he really say that? Yes, right. He did.
What company? I'm curious.
Fisher Investments.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, they're out in California. Yes. And that doesn't surprise me coming from them. That sounds like something Dave Ramsey would say or somebody like that, because he's not a fan of annuities either, as far as I know.
Well, he had some little brochure he was going to give out or something.
Right.
And then at the end of it, that's what he said, very emphatically, I might add. And it really kind of, well, it's not just us.
You're correct. All right, Steve, how is investing similar to the teacher strike? I told you I was going to talk about it.
Oh, man. It's a walkout.
Here, let me get my plate carrier on here and my Kevlar helmet. Let's see what happens here.
Well, in the ways they're similar is because nobody agrees on the best resolution to either one. Wouldn't you say?
I agree with that. I mean, you know, one side just thinks more money. Well, how much more? Well, we don't know, but more.
Well, there was some. I want to talk about a specific part of the teacher's strike or walkout, whichever euphemism you prefer to use for it.
A rose by any other name.
Regardless of what you want to call it, okay? I want to talk about the cap gains tax and the repeal of the cap gains tax. There's a bill called 1086, I believe is the bill number.
SB. I can check that, but why don't you first kind of tell us what capital gains are?
Okay. All right.
Start there.
Capital gains are the difference between your cost basis and your sale basis of an item. And what does that mean? I'm going to try to explain what that means.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a good way to start there, I don't think.
So if Steve pays $10 for XYZ stock today, Russell, and he holds it for a year and a day or longer, he gets the long-term capital gains rate. If it's less than a year, he pays ordinary income rates on it. Okay, so by capital gains, I'm referring to long-term, over a year, right? If he holds it over a year and he sells that stock for $20, he buys it for $10, he sells it for $20, he has a $10 capital gain, right? A gain of $10 per share.
Okay.
Okay, that's a capital gain. That would be taxed as a capital gain if he holds it for a year and a day or longer. Shorter than that, he'll pay ordinary income taxes on it. The cap gains rates at the federal level are zero for up to 77,000 married filing joint, 15% for 77 to about 420,000, and then above 420, it goes to 20% on cap gains.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
So what's being taxed is the profit you make when you sell investments, basically.
That's one thing, yes. Or when you sell real estate.
Or real
estate. That's right. Same thing.
That's right.
If you sell a business, it's the same thing. But businesses are taxed at cap gains also.
Okay, so it's money that's coming in that you're not earning as wages. I mean, I'm still head around. Okay. What's the difference between...
It's an appreciation in price of an item that you own. Think of it that way.
Okay.
That you don't necessarily sell during that period, but you sell at the end of the period.
Okay, so...
That's when you realize the gain. It's what it's called realizing the gain, essentially, is what that is.
For those of us that grew up in Muskogee, that means the profit, right?
Yes.
The
increase
in
price.
But like if you sell a shotgun for more than you paid for it, that's not a capital gains type deal.
No.
Or your car, something like that.
Correct.
It's just certain things like investments, your house.
I have a list of them here, as a matter of fact.
Well, then I'll just shut up and let you do that then. You
know? Let's hear the list. That'll help.
Yeah.
Some of the things that are affected by the cap gains rate, the sale of real estate, your home. Another one would be the sale of real estate as in a rental property. Sale of stocks, bonds, mutual funds held for 1 year or longer. The sale of a ranch or a farm, which there are many
of. So we're still kind of on real estate there. That's still a property.
Right, but it's a business. That's a business entity what I'm referring to. In that case, it's ongoing business. The sale of a business, like Steve owns or I own. You know, if I sell my business, eventually retirement, that's a capital gain. Sale of business property, and by that I mean mostly plant and equipment. If you have a tool and die shop, you probably have $1 million worth of equipment in your shop, and you sell it at some point. Sale of art, gold, and other metals, both precious and non-precious. Those are capital gains, Texas capital gains, if held for more than a year.
Okay.
Those are also capital gains. These are just some of the capital gains. These aren't all of them, but this is my little list that I came up with. And one of the things I want to point out, on the sale of business equipment and the sale of rental real estate, Steve, if you own a rental property, let's say it's a $100,000 rental property, you own it for 20 years, you would amortize the cost of the property over that 20-year period. You paid $100,000 for it. At the end of 20 years, your cost basis would be zero because you've written it off over that period.
You've
depreciated
it out, right?
Right. You've depreciated it down to zero. Now, you can't do that with the home that you own, that you live in, but you can do it with a rental property, okay? So at the end of that, if you sell it for even for $100,000 that you paid, or let's say you sell it for $200,000 just for the sake of argument, the IRS says you have a $200,000 gain.
$200,000.
Yeah, because your cost basis is zero.
Right.
At that point, because you've written it down to zero. So you have a $200,000 gain, and that's taxed as a capital gain. This is an example of what would be taxed as a capital gain. Even if you sold it for $100,000, exactly what you paid for it, you still have a capital gain of $100,000 because you wrote it down to zero. You had a write-off.
No, I understand that. I thought you were saying if you're down to zero and you sell it for $100,000, the IRS recognized it as a $200,000.
No.
It's just that $100,000, right?
Right, it's from zero to whatever number you sell it at.
And that's, so again, for accounting purposes, you're paying taxes on your profit.
Yes, exactly correct. You're paying taxes on your profit. Now, OEA and some other folks have been spreading some rumors about the repeal of the capital gains tax. And I can't remember who brought the bill before, Russell, to the Senate?
I don't. I was off last.
I saw the debate on the floor, and I think it was a Democratic senator, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% certain of that. So
probably a House member, though, right?
No, this was a Senate member. Actually.
It was the Senate. Okay.
This is a bill that can originate in the Senate because it is not technically a revenue raising bill. It's a repeal of an exemption, which I think gets them around the rule. The House, having to originate in the House rule, I think is what that does.
No, it's kind of like, you say happy, I say glad.
Okay, yeah. So, but you're right. Anyhow, at the end of the day, OEA is out there saying that this repeal of capital gains would only affect 1% of the population in the state of Oklahoma.
Right, 1%. Because not a lot of us are running around selling our gold or our farmland or...
Okay, but let's look at the real numbers.
Okay.
Not the real numbers.
52% of the people in the United States own stocks or bonds or mutual funds. Those people are all going to be affected in Oklahoma by the repeal of this law.
So that'd be more than 1%,
wouldn't it? Yes, that's slightly more than 1%, 52%. There are 80,000 farm owners in Oklahoma. There are 280,000 small business owners in Oklahoma. These are just a few of the people that all be impacted. Myself, everybody in this room pretty much would be impacted by these changes if they came into effect. Mainly on the stock and bond side, you know, somebody right now, that if you have a married couple and they make $50,000 a year, right now their cap gains rate is zero. Because under $77,000, the tax rate is zero at the federal level. The cap gains rate is zero. This would whack them for 5%, where currently they're paying zero. And the problem with this is you're discouraging a lot of things by repealing the capital gains tax. You're discouraging people from investing in businesses. You're discouraging people from investing in the stock market, mutual funds, whatever it might be, along with agriculture and ranches, all those things. And, you know, I have clients that sell businesses when they retire and they're worth a large amount of money, you know, when they get to retirement. And so it's quite a hit they would take, Steve. You know, I have some clients that take, you know, sell businesses for well over $1 million, and this would be quite a hit that they would take if this tax rate were increased, if they were hit with this.
Okay, so while you were talking, I did a little digging real quick, and it looks like it was House Bill 3113. Does that sound right?
No, it doesn't. I'm not saying that's wrong, but the one I'm talking about is SB 1086 is the one I'm referring to.
Okay, that would be a Senate bill.
Right, there might be two different bills out there. It's quite possible.
It says, and that bill, House Bill 3113, was an income tax restoration on high earners, and that was introduced by Representative Eric Proctor, who is a Tulsa representative. So
he's a Republican,
bill.
Is he not? Am I mistaken?
Eric Proctor? I think he's a Democrat.
I could be wrong. I think that's a different bill, though, than what I'm talking about.
Okay, so we had a question about whether if that capital gains change happened, which it doesn't look like it's going to, but if it did, would that affect people's 401ks?
It will not affect their 401k.
Because that's not capital gain.
Correct. Okay. Money you take out of a 401k or an IRA is taxed as ordinary income.
Ordinary income.
No matter how long you own it. Now, if you have what we call non-qualified accounts in my business, which is a non-IRA, just a regular taxable account. If Steve brings me $100,000 from his bank and invests it with me, let's just say, that would be we would have a capital gain, where the capital gain would apply. Senate Bill 1086, I don't think is going to see the light of day because the leadership in the Senate is not going to bring it to the floor. And that's my understanding. And if somebody has evidence to the contrary, let me know. But that's my understanding of where we're at. Oklahoma has a 5% income tax rate, which is actually fairly high compared to some states. And you hit the maximum right here, $7,000, I think it is? It's something very low. But in Texas, their cap gains rate is zero and their income tax rate is zero.
Is it fair to say that some of your point is the OEA folks, the teaching industrial complex, is propagating a falsehood?
Yes.
When they say that only 1% of the people will be impacted if the capital gains rate is
repealed.
Repealed.
That's exactly right. And they're saying that the teachers are thinking mistakenly they're not going to pay more taxes under this law. They will. Half of them will, basically.
Did you see the one where some guy was talking about the difference in cost of living and $6,000 was the number, and someplace they get $6,000 more in their check, but the cost of living is so high that's eaten up.
Right.
And so I think Oklahoma ended up being like third or fourth in the country when you factor in the cost of living as far as the purchasing power of their money. And a member of that teacher industrial complex, jumped this guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not real money if I don't see it in my real paycheck and put it in my real account. And it's like, and a bunch of people jumped on him, kind of like, no. If it costs you $6,000 less to live,
right,
that's a real $6,000 that you're not spending. You already have it. You're just not having to spend it.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. More Money Talk right after the break on News 102.3 KRMG. The Money Talk here on News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in just a little over 5 minutes, you'll have your top stories from the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and your forecast. And yes, It's going to get warmer. Trust me, a lot warmer by about Tuesday. Stay tuned. Next hour, we got Fox News Sunday. Meanwhile, Dan's giving away books, and he's got a pretty good one this week. Tell him about it, please.
That's right. It is The Elements of Investing, Easy Lessons for Every Investor. Excuse me. We'll send you a free copy of it and the information on the Equity Link CDs so you can do some research on those and find out how they work and what they are and what they are not. And we're going to talk about those in just a second. But anyhow, if you want that information in the book, just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address when you get our voicemail, and we will send that information out to you absolutely free. No cost and no obligation whatsoever. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Russell, we have a link on my website to a video on the equity-linked or market-linked certificates of deposit. They're essentially the same thing. They're called by both names, market-linked or equity-linked CDs. And it's on my website at moneytalktulsa.com. That's moneytalktulsa.com. There's a featured link section on the right, and if you click on it, it'll take you to another page. And it's the first one on there. It says market-linked CD video or something like that, something to that effect. It's a good video. I've watched it several times. And I wanted to talk about these for a minute or two and explain what they are and what they are not. And, you know, there's a whole variety of different groups. There's a family called structured products, Russell, in our industry. Part of structured products are equity-linked CDs. There are many parts of structured products that are not insured and they're not guaranteed by any means. So you want to be careful about which ones you're looking at if you venture down this road, because there are some that are guaranteed and some that are absolutely not guaranteed. And I want to be clear about that. And so the other thing I wanted to advise you about is that these equity-linked CDs I've mentioned before, they're not liquid, right? Remember when I said if it's a five-year CD, you've got to hold it for 5 years. Otherwise, it's not guaranteed. Right. If you hold it for 4 years and a half, it's not guaranteed. If you hold it for 5 years, they will guarantee your return of principal normally. Now, some of them, like I said, some of these products don't, so you have to be careful, you know, which ones you're looking at. The ones I deal with generally have the guarantee of return principal at maturity, not before maturity. If you sell one before maturity, you're going to take a loss.
Like, for sure, there's no way that you could possibly... No,
I mean, you could possibly come out ahead, but I always tell people, you're going to take a loss. Just that way, they're thinking worst-case scenario. Okay. I try to prepare them for
managing
that.
Those expectations.
Right, managing expectations here. So I tell people, if you can't tie that money up for 5 years to the day, don't put it in there. Or for 3 years, whatever the term of the CD might be, don't put it in there. And if you think there's a chance you're going to need it, don't put it in there. I mean, or put less in there. You know, keep some of it back, right, and keep some of it out.
This is not a liquid asset.
It is absolutely not a liquid asset. It is illiquid as they come. I don't know how I can be more
illiquid.
Clear.
Illiquid. I'm not sure that's a word, but I like it.
It is. Well, at least in my lexicon.
Illiquid.
Would that make it a solid?
Yes. They're not liquid assets. They are
gas?
Absolutely not.
You're
liquid.
The science guy.
Okay. He can probably tell me. Yeah. Mark can educate us on that along with a bunch of other things. Anyhow, you can't sell them. I mean,
right.
They will tell you in the disclosure information that there's secondary markets for these. There's really not. There's really no secondary market for these. You're not going to be able to sell them. Don't count on that, because if you get there and need it and it's not there, you're out of luck, shall we say. So you don't want to go down that road. And there's the other drawback to them is, if you make 1.5% in a bank CD, let's just say the bank's paying 1.5% on a 3-year CD, just random number here. And this equity-linked CD, Steve, he puts his money into one for a 3-year equity-linked CD with me. And then the index augers into the ground the day after Steve buys it, okay? So at the end of the time period, he gets his money back, but he gets no interest. So the opportunity cost there was the 1.5% at the bank that you could have made at the bank that you didn't make with the equity-linked CD. And that's the downside to it, you know, one of the downsides to it. And so you have to be cognizant of that. You have to be careful about that. The other thing is that they are taxed as ordinary income.
I was going to ask, is that a capital gain?
It is not a capital gain.
It's taxed as ordinary income.
Correct. You would think it would be a capital gain if you buy it at 100 and you sell it at 150. It's taxed as ordinary income. On these products, they're taxed as ordinary income.
And to be clear, generally speaking, ordinary income's higher.
Always a higher rate than capital gains. Okay. Yes, it always is, no matter what. It's never a lower rate. So, I mean, I'm trying to be as clear as I can about
this. That's pretty clear.
So they are not taxed as capital gains. It's a very good point. They're taxed as ordinary income, always as ordinary income. And so you have to do your research on these. And, you know, they're basically a CD that's tied to an equity index of some sort. There's all kinds of different indexes that they're tied to. And if you want to know more about them, call me and we'll send you the information. But do your due diligence. Please do your homework. Please, please, please do your homework on these well before you buy them or invest any money in them. And if you have questions about one, just call me. I'll be happy to go over it with you and send you the information.
And if you just got about 3 minutes to spend looking at information about it, you can go to moneytalktulsa.com, look at the featured links area, and you'll see the video there telling you about those equity-linked CDs. Meanwhile, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Elements of Investing, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do leave your name and address. It is Sunday, and they are not there, and they need to know where to send the book. That number again, 398-8387. You're listening to Money Talk on News 102.3 KRMG. Huey Lewis has got Meniere's disease and has lost almost all of his hearing. And so he's had to cancel his tour this year. So, Huey, hope you get to feeling better. I hope you recover soon. You are listening to Money Talk here on News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG. Fox News Sunday's all queued up for you here at the top of the hour after the news. Meanwhile, if you've got questions, you can text us at 95920. And, of course, Dan is giving away books.
That's right. Thank you, Russell. The book is The Elements of Investing, Easy Lessons for Every Investor. You can get a free copy of it, and we'll send you the information on the equity-linked CDs, the brochure that explains what they are and what they are not. And there's a lot of both in that category, I'd say, and you need to do your research. Anyhow, it's all free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387, 918-398-8387. Just leave your name and address, please, and we'll send it to you.
So does that book, The Elements of Investing, go beyond buy low, sell high?
Yes.
Okay, because I thought that was the most important thing.
And don't do something stupid.
Okay. Well, well, that would be the book of life there now. So that's the elements
stupid.
Of living
that's
there.
Chapter one.
Yeah, and all the chapters in between, pretty much.
Okay, the elements of personal relationships.
As I mentioned, you can text us questions at 95920, and somebody did just that. And they asked, do you know if Social Security really will get an adjustment in 2018? And the answer is
yes and no. Yeah, I'm assuming they mean a cost of living adjustment. I'm assuming is what that's referring to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Social Security is pegged to the CPI index, Consumer Price Index, is what the cost of living adjustments are basically based on. They're based on that. They gave them, the average Social Security recipient receives about $1,200, a little over $1,200 a month. They gave them a 2% cost of living adjustment this year. And it came out to, what, $27? I think you found on
$27 and some change.
$27 a month.
For the average.
For the average person, average recipient. But here's the drawback. They raised the Medicare Part B premium for the lowest rung, which is where 60 or 70% of the population is lowest cost, Medicare Part B. They raised it by $25 a month. So you get $2. 27 minus 25, Russell. You end up with about $2 a month. So your cost of living adjustment is, I'm trying to think of how small, that's like 1/10 of 1% maybe.
Yeah, is the actual rate of inflation.
It's not even close. No, it's not even close. You basically didn't get a cost of living adjustment. You got $2 a month on $1,200, which is not very good.
So to the texter, in fact, they're getting an adjustment, but they're not getting a raise.
That sounds like teacher talk now.
That's accurate.
That's right.
Assuming they're on Medicare, which they most likely are.
Right. Right.
They're going to hand them, you know, with this hand, they're going to hand them $27. And with this hand, they're going to take 25 back.
Oh, you're correct. Yeah.
And inflation's going to take the rest of it back. So they're probably actually going to lose money.
Yeah, you are. In terms of purchasing power, there is no doubt you're losing money. Absolutely. There is no doubt. Because if you take 1,200 times, you know, let's just say 2%, which is probably close to where inflation is right now, that's $24 a year.
Wow.
Or a month, excuse me, $24 a month. And you're getting $2 a month. When it's all said and done, you're getting $2 and inflation is 24. So you're in the hole. I mean, yeah, absolutely, you're in the hole. Sorry, that's what I meant by that when you were starting talking about when I mentioned the teacher stuff. You were confusing me with what all the wages were you were talking about. But yeah, they're getting about $2 a month more, and they're in the hole, but their costs are going up by $24, essentially.
Right.
At the end of the day. And so you're about $22 behind where you were a year ago. Does that sound like a fair assessment, Russell?
I would think your math is impeccable, sir.
Well, I don't know about that.
After all, you go to Harvard.
You beat me to it.
Keep throwing me into that bus.
You're a Harvard man. Harvard.
Oh, dear. Anyhow, on the Social Security subject, I have a couple friends, more than a couple friends, who work for certain governmental agencies, Steve.
Like, I'll tell you what, you have a lot fewer friends this week than you did last week. I'll tell you that.
Yes. Anyhow, they work for certain governmental agencies like Tulsa County and Tulsa Public, or not Tulsa Public Schools, Tulsa Police Department, excuse me.
I assure you, you don't have a single friend that works for Tulsa Public Schools.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Anyhow, if you work for TPD or for some of these other entities, some of these entities did not in the past pay Social Security. They didn't pay the self-employment or the Social Security tax, whatever you want to call it. They didn't pay in the Social Security system. Okay, let's just call it that, for lack of a better term. So they have this wonderful thing, Steve, called the government pension offset. Now, that should be clear, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy to understand what that
means.
Words
mean things there.
Yeah, government pension offset. So you have these TPD officers who think they're going to retire and draw a nice, big, fat Social Security check. Not so fast. Let's say you're a widow. Your husband worked for XYZ company, and you worked for Tulsa Police Department. And that you're one of the ones that did not pay into Social Security for Tulsa Police. They will reduce your widow's Social Security check, which is normally 100% of what the survivor's check would have been, Steve, right?
Yep.
So if he was getting $2,000 a month and you're a widow, you would normally get $2,000
a month
after he passes away, right? But since you worked for TPD and didn't pay into Social Security, they have this government pension offset. They're going to reduce your Social Security check by 2/3 of the amount of your government pension amount, your TPD pension.
Wow.
So if your TPD pension is $2,000 a month.
Yeah, you're netting.
They're going to reduce your Social Security benefits by 2,000 times 0.66. So by $1,300.
Now, if she hadn't worked at all,
she would get the full amount.
She'd get the full amount of her husband's, wouldn't she?
Yep. Shame on her for working.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, let's don't punish people for working. I mean, Lord knows we wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, they don't want you to work. I mean, it's just, it's some bizarre math. I don't know how they come to this conclusion. And so the sad part is, when the husband worked, in this case, in the private sector for 30 years or whatever he did, he paid in just as much as somebody else whose spouse will get the full benefit.
Right.
If he paid in $5,000 a year, Social Security, whatever the number is, and somebody else paid that in, they'll still get the full benefit. Their widow will get the full benefit. His widow will not get the full benefit.
So they went without all the money that the husband paid in.
Right.
In anticipation that when they reach Social Security age, they would get whatever benefit they're entitled to.
Right.
The money's gone, and she is only going to get roughly a third.
Yes, exactly a third, basically, of what it would be. Yeah,
so the other 2/3 just disappears into the ether.
Yes. Into the trust fund, into Al Gore's trust fund.
Yeah, it disappears into the lockbox.
One, two, three, lockbox.
I'm dying to know the combination and location of said lockbox and where it supposedly exists. As you know, it does not exist.
It does not actually.
It does not actually exist.
It's not even a really good metaphor, frankly. Well,
you and Al can discuss that along with global warming and a few other things. But there's another one in there, and I can't remember the name of it. It's the government pension offset, or the windfall elimination provision is the other one. And basically it says that if you're the TPD officer, you know, who worked and had two careers, Steve, if you had a second career where you worked for 10 years or more and paid into Social Security, but in your first career you worked for TPD and you didn't pay into Social Security, guess what? They're going to take your benefits back again.
Wow, wow. That's unbelievable.
So if you're a TPD officer or a firefighter, I would highly recommend you get the report run, because there are ways to get around this. There are ways to beat this. They're not easy, but there are ways to do it.
Now, is this just for public service?
Anybody who doesn't pay into Social Security. And in some states, that's teachers. Colorado and Texas, in the past, that's been teachers. Now, I don't think in Oklahoma. I think in Oklahoma, they all pay into Social Security. Okay. I think they always have. But anybody who's potentially exempt from the Social Security, and I'll tell you who in the past has included: clergy, railroad workers, public service, governmental employees, state and or federal governmental employees. Some categories are in, some categories are not in. It just depends on the industry, what they're doing. You know, the biggest group I see is law enforcement and firefighters that have been exempt in the past from them. But anyhow, and teachers, I've run into many teachers that have been exempt. So I always ask them, what state did you teach in? Where did you teach? And if they say Colorado or Texas, I have to do some digging, because they were exempt in both those states for many years. They were exempt, and they may still be, as far as I know. It's a weird deal. It's like every state, it's like they get to decide if they want to participate in this system or not, which is odd to me. It just seems odd to me because most of us don't have a choice.
Do the police officers, Tulsa police officers, do they have an option if they wanted to pay into Social Security?
I can't recall. I don't think so. I don't think they were. And I have run into some people where they did have a certain option of which pension plan to pick with the government and things like that. I don't think TPD had the option. I think what we had was certain TPD officers before a certain day didn't participate. And I think after a certain day they did participate, I think is what they did. But I can't remember off the top of my head to be precise. So don't hold me to that. I could be wrong.
Well, there's probably a whole lot of officers listening right now that are kind of pooping their pants over that one, you know. So,
well, they call me when they go down to file for Social Security and or they talk to the office down there and they find out that these things, this windfall elimination provision exists, and they didn't know about it. A lot of the TPD officers did not know about this, that they not only get hosed on their benefits, they get hosed on their spousal benefits as well for their spouse. If their spouse passes away or something like that, they still get their benefits reduced even then because they work for TPD or for any other entity like that that didn't participate in Social Security.
But, and they get shot at.
Yep.
That too. But let's go back for a second because I heard you say there are some ways to get around some of this.
Yes.
And as a reserve law enforcement officer yourself, I'm sure you've researched all that. So
yes.
I don't know if you want to get into the weeds on that.
But. Well, I can try. Yeah, I can try for a minute. Well, the ways around it are Social Security lets you earn back those benefits if you worked for a number of years, between 20 and 30 years in qualifying employment. So if you're a firefighter and you work one day on and have 2 days off, which is typically their schedule, 24 on and then 2 days off, a lot of them have extra jobs. If you work an extra job and you pay into Social Security with that extra job, which a lot of them do, then you may qualify. You may have 20 to 30 years, and you may be able to get full benefits from Social Security. Depends on how many years of what Social Security calls qualifying income, which it's not the standard table what you think. It's higher than what you might think it is, and it's been adjusted for inflation. And I have the table. I can send it to you. It shows you how much you had to have made each year at that second job. So if you did that, yes, you can get around the deduction, if you will.
It is complicated. All right. We are going to take a quick time out, but I want to remind you, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Elements of Investing, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Be sure and leave your name and address because it's Sunday and you're going to get their voicemail and they need to know where to send that free book and information on equity-linked CDs. Absolutely free. 918-398-8387. More Money Talk after the break on News 102.3 KRMG. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Coming up in 8 minutes, your top stories in the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center. And your much warmer forecast, I promise, from Fox 23. Stay tuned. Next hour, we've got Fox News Sunday. If you've got questions for us today, you can text us at 95920. And Mr. Dan Witham, your host of Money Talk, gives away books like Christmas presents every Sunday. So what do we got?
That's right. We've got The Elements of Investing, Easy Lessons for Every Investor. You can get a free copy of this book and the information on our Equity Link CDs. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and address, please, and we'll send you the information and the book absolutely free at no cost and no obligation whatsoever. You said we had a call, Mark, from a firefighter? And okay, he said it was a good amount that you have to put into the wages on the extra jobs to get the Social Security benefits. That's correct. And I have the table. I was trying to find it here in my notes. I thought I had brought it with me, but I do have the table at my office, and I can email it out to or mail it out to somebody if they want the information. It's a different amount each year, and basically it says you have to have earned like $10,000 in the year or $15,000 in the year for it to as a year to offset your the reduction they give you.
So it's not like you can just work a part-time job 4 or 5 hours a week and skip right. All this.
It's going to be a little bit more than that.
You're going to have a pretty serious part-time job
right.
Or second job to
yes.
do that.
Yeah, but a lot of these guys do. There's quite a few that do that. And the thing is, if you know what the numbers are, you can always try to work enough hours to make sure you get to that number, which is why I want you to get the information so you know what you're up against. At least it'll tell you what you're up against. Then you can figure out, can I do this or not? Because I've talked to some people about it that are within 4 or 5 years of being to hit that number. And so it makes sense for them to get a part-time job for a couple of years to hit that number. Now, if you got 20 years to go, it's a little bit more of an uphill battle, obviously, than if it's just 4 or 5 years. So
do you mean to say that there are professions other than teachers who work second jobs and third jobs?
Yes, there are. There are a few of them.
I didn't think that. I thought only that industry was, you know,
but work now, second jobs. There's lots of people out there. And firefighters, you know, this is common for firefighters more than police officers. Police officers do it a good bit. But usually when police officers are working second jobs, they're usually security jobs or something in uniform, you know.
Well, they have a different schedule.
Involving their main occupation, you know, or similar skills. Firefighters, a lot of them have jobs mowing yards, cutting trees, doing all kinds of things, odd things, because they're off for 2 days in a row, and they have more time to go allocate toward a daytime, you know, hours to allocate toward a job or whatever it might be. It's just a different work schedule. It's just entirely different work schedules that they have. And it kind of benefits firefighters in that regard. It does, but, you know, it's, we all make choices.
Well, fireman's schedule really is better than a policeman's schedule, And I just know a guy who used to be a policeman who would get off at 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning and go work a security job from about 8 to 3 or 4 and then go back to work at 7 o'clock. I'm just saying, firemen, they got a little bit better because they do have those consecutive days off.
Right. And so it's, but then they got to work 24 hours straight too, which is not really easy. So I wouldn't want to have to do that. I prefer not to. I want to talk about investing here for a minute since the show is about investing, supposedly. The majority of your retirement nest egg will not come from investment returns. Doesn't matter who you are. It will come from your income. Many people think they can invest $1,000 today, Stephen, and turn it into $1 million next week.
That's probably why they should get this book, huh?
Yes, it just doesn't work that way. People have unrealistic expectations. And one of the things I have further in my notes is not saving enough. A lot of people just don't save enough. I was talking to a gentleman just the other day that was saving, believe it or not, north of 24% of every check he gets, Steve.
Wow.
And guess what? He has a lot of money.
Funny how that works.
A surprise. Yeah. What a surprise.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, okay. So live under your means.
Yeah, he lives well below his means and is able to squirrel away a lot of money, and that's why he has money. I ran into a lady years ago that was a teacher that had over $1 million saved up.
Wow.
And invested. And she's a teacher. And, you know, she's not making a ton of money. I don't think anybody would say she's making a ton of money. I mean, she's just living well below her means. And this is something we've got to figure out how to do. You know,
so your personal choices can actually impact your own life. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And we'll talk about something here that's relevant to that subject, this crazy debt that we have. The average family in this country spends about $378 a month on car payments. Now, to make that, to pay that, you got to make $581 in pre-tax money per month. That's a lot of money, especially if you're a teacher or somebody that doesn't make a lot of money. You know, if your take-home income is $2,000 a month, and you're paying $500 toward that car, that's a big chunk of change. We've gone debt crazy with this, and unfortunately, the car and the finance industry have made it very easy for us to get that debt, you know, to take on that debt and credit cards, car payments, whatever it might be, mortgage payments, you name it.
Yep.
We seem to encourage it. It seems to be the American way. And, you know, that's been a generational change for a lot of people probably worldwide, not just in the U.S. But we've made it very easy to borrow money nowadays and even harder to pay it back. And so it keeps getting harder and harder. We keep getting further and further behind. And Steve can attest to this. The people in the criminal justice system that are hit with bills and fines and stuff, they never get out of debt. They go to court and they get hit with more fees and more fines. They get behind, they get arrested, they get more fees and more fines.
You know what I want to say for Tulsa County, by the way, if you have a failure to pay situation going on, Judge Musman just put out an order. If you'll go down, get your payment plans, just make a payment, they'll withdraw that failure to pay warrant, and you can get back on track. And
like
congratulations to Tulsa County for doing that.
Thanks, Judge Musman. All right, we're going to have to wrap it up for this Sunday. If you'd like a free copy of today's book, The Elements of Investing, and free information on equity-linked CDs and how all that works, you can call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do please leave your name and address when you get their voicemail. The number again, 918-398-8387. You can also go to Tulsa, MoneyTalkTulsa.com, MoneyTalkTulsa.com. Send him an email, get the book that way. You've been listening to Money Talk. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11. Up next, it's time for the news in the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center. I'm Russell Mills. Have a great afternoon. Fox News Sunday's next.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need.
Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.